RadioInfluence.com.
It is fight week for the UFC, and we are going to get you ready for Saturday's UFC 248 on this edition of the MMA Report podcast. And we are presented by Roman, and coming up later on in the show, we're going to tell you about that special offer that Roman has for the MMA Report podcast listener, as you can get a free online visit and free two-day shipping. We'll tell you about that later on in the program, along with talking about UFC 248. We are going to take a look back at what happened last week in Virginia at the fight night card, obviously with the main event, Kevin McDonald, the referee, screwing up in one of the matchups, and also kind of talk about the women's featherweight title picture, kind of where maybe we think it stands right now as we kind of head into, as Amanda Nunes already said, she wants her next title defense to be at featherweight title defense. But Daniel, UFC 248, this is a pay-per-view that I'm really looking forward to, because, you know, I think when we look at the UFC in 2020, I think the thought process has always been, whether we're talking about a fight night card or a pay-per-view event, of, you know, you have a really solid main event fight, and then maybe have another fight or two or fighter here and there that you're really excited for. But as I look at this complete UFC 248 lineup, I'm really excited about this fight card top to bottom.
Yeah, especially, like, all right, the main event and the co-main event to me are two great fights. Like, just absolutely fantastic contest. And they really are. Again, I love food, man. I'm a fatty, so I always compare things to meals. And we have a really nice entree with this main event and co-main event. I mean, this is a steak with filet mignon, and they added some chicken wings to the side. And I'm just in love with the main event and co-main event. I'm in love with Adesanya versus Romero. Sure, Romero has lost two in a row. I would love to see Paulo Costa in his spot. But Romero's history as a middleweight and reputation makes him such an intriguing challenger. And Adesanya is a fighter where you watch him fight and you think, damn, I'm watching someone who could be one of the next legendary fighters. He still has a whole lot of work to do. And then the Zhang Weili versus Joanna Jędrzejczyk fight is another compelling fight. One of the most compelling female fights we have on the books so far for 2020. So those two are great. But what really puts this card over the top is the side dishes, Jason. The preliminary card on ESPN is a really strong preliminary card. I mean, for me, it has to start with the return of Sean O'Malley. I'm looking forward to seeing him take on Jose Quinones. He's been away for 2 years, and I feel like he's someone in this bantamweight division who just has so much potential to be a star and to be really successful, that Sean O'Malley represents one of those fights, not including the main event or co-main event, that I'm excited about. I mean, like, what else gets you excited to the UFC 248 dinner table?
If we're just looking at that preliminary card on ESPN, a name that sticks out to me is Mark Mattson taking on Austin Hubbard at 155 pounds. The Gerald Merchart-Deron Wynn fight is another fight that does intrigue me. I mean, you know, Deron Wynn, you know, him coming in MMA, it was about the wrestling, but since we have seen him in the UFC, he's just been a striker. So it's one of those fights where I kind of go there, will Deron Wynn finally use his wrestling abilities? You know, I look at that. You mentioned about Sean O'Malley. Yeah, I'm really, you know, interested to see him. You know, of course, we know the issues that he's had, you know, with USADA and everything that's happened with him over the past couple of years. You know, I look at that main card, Alex Cowboy Oliveira. I don't feel like he can have a boring fight. You know, that's a great pay-per-view kickoff there. Him taking on Max Griffin, Neil Magny taking on Lee Jianling, that's a good one. Interest me, Dariush, Jakar Close. You know, I was watching the second episode Embedded, and Jakar Close basically, you know, summing up what he said was basically like, hey, it's my time, Benil's had his time, and it's time for me to kind of take that shine from him. But, you know, overall, I mean, yes, it is about that main event and co-main event, but, you know, for me, as, and we always talk about this on the podcast, that we are fight fans, that it is about quality, not quantity. And there's nothing wrong if you are a fight fan that, you know, you prefer quantity over quality. There's nothing wrong with that. I just speak at it from my view. I like that the quality mixed martial arts action that we're getting. And to me, that's what we're getting from UFC 248. Because if you tell me that both champions are retaining their title, which is my prediction, okay, obviously I'm with you. If you tell me one title changed hand, not shocked. If you tell me we have two new champions, I wouldn't be shocked either. But I think part of the storyline of UFC 248, as we sit here on early Wednesday afternoon, is all about Friday morning. Will Yoel Romero and Joanna Jędrzejczyk have any weigh-in issues? We've seen Yoel miss weight in the past. He did make weight for his last fight against Paul Costa. And of course, Joanna Jędrzejczyk, you think about, when she had those struggles as champion for the fight in New York City against Rose Namajunas. And then we all remember at the end of last year, when she was taking on Michelle Waterson, it was like, Tuesday, Wednesday, that fight week, that, it was kind of being thrown out there that, hey, maybe this fight's in jeopardy, and people noting about maybe the weight issue. Joanna, Angela Hill is ready to step in, and ultimately Joanna ends up fighting Michelle Waterson and gets a win. So to me, I think part of the storyline of Saturday night is actually Friday morning in Las Vegas.
Yeah, Jason, like Yoel Romero and Joanna Jędrzejczyk could both very well win, but we could still not have two new champions because they missed weight. I'm much more concerned about Yoel Romero just because, let me do a little look here. Let's see. Oh, yeah. He has a history of missing weight, and a big history of missing weight, especially in championship opportunities. So he also, when I read his comments, Yoel doesn't do a good job of owning up to missing weight. Like, he always has excuses, which like throws up a big red flag. I know, he blamed the short time for one of his weight cuts that he had, and it's just like, own up to it. I feel like with the added pressure, there's no excuse for him to miss weight. But the reason why I'm more concerned about Yoel Romero is that throughout his career, he has had several instances that just make no sense and are perplexing, and they're just kind of like bonehead moments. So that's my concern for Romero, is that he has a history of missing weight more than once, and I just feel as though this would be like it just seems like sometimes these things happen in narratives. Like we have a guy miss weight in a big main event, and then a week later we have another one. So I wouldn't be surprised, but honestly, fingers crossed, everything is good. I read that he's like 13 pounds off his weight, like as of a day ago or something of that nature. I'm sure it's harder to cut his weight because of his body type. But regardless, once we get past that Friday and hopefully everyone's on weight, then we can kind of look forward to these fights. And these are two dynamic main event fights where I've gone back and forth on these contests, but as we're talking now, Jason, me and you are definitely riding the same wave. I do think both champions retain.
In terms of the main event, I think the question mark I have with Yoel Romero is, will he utilize his wrestling? I think breaking down that fight is not necessarily difficult. I think from Israel's side of the equation, it's about being able to keep that range, getting in and getting out, because obviously he's got that big, reach advantage. He's got an 80-inch reach advantage, or 80-inch reach. And Yoel Romero, I want to say, is like 72 inches. So Yoel's going to have to get in closer. So obviously to me, Yoel, it's about closing that distance. And we've seen over the years with Yoel is, there are times where I think he definitely takes rounds off, but then there are times where it's a quick switch where all of a sudden just go ask Chris Weidman or Lyoto Machida, where you're not thinking something comes, then all of a sudden, man, here comes that left hand, or here comes that knee, and your night is quickly over. So that to me, I think breaking down the fight, Israel is a fighter that he's becoming this. When he's fighting, you need to be in front of the television set, because he's a special fighter to watch. Just when you just watch his abilities and what he's able to do, and you think about just, how quickly he disposed of Robert Whittaker. I was sitting back and watching the countdown show, and, just because we have of so many fights, some things I think kind of you forget about, but you forget about the end of that first round where he drops Robert Whittaker. And if there is 5-10 more seconds left in the round, he probably gets a stoppage victory in the opening round. So to me, Israel's a guy that ultimately draws you there. But I think for me, it's more about, how does Yoel try to close that distance? And does he use that wrestling? And if he's able to get Israel down a couple times and say Israel's able to get back up, will that ultimately wear down Israel as the fight goes on?
Yeah, I think that to me represents the surefire way Yoel Romero can win this fight. That's the wrong way of putting it. Even if Yoel decides to utilize his wrestling, I still think Adesanya will beat him. But I do think utilizing takedowns, utilizing that background that got the man to the damn Olympics, is something where Adesanya's wrestling is a major question mark in relation to everything else we know about Israel Adesanya. Like, I feel like that's the one aspect of his game that hasn't necessarily been put under intense scrutiny inside a championship level fight against a championship level wrestler. So that's where when we have a fighter like Adesanya, who we kind of project to be a phenom type guy, you have all these check boxes you want to check off. And I don't necessarily think we've gotten that wrestling defense check box check marked. So that's why the wrestling strategy from Yoel Romero is something that I think should be his go-to move. But the thing is, like, I doubt he will employ that. Throughout his career, he has not employed that in instances where it would make sense. Granted, for the most part, it works out quite well. There are not too many instances where Romero needed to go to his wrestling, because his earth-shattering power is what has really made him. I mean, his earth-shattering power got him this title fight, this title opportunity. He's lost two in a row, but he's built an immense reputation as a scary MF-er, and Israel Adesanya didn't want to sit on the sidelines. He decided to call out Romero, and it's something where in the age of fighters avoiding tough fights, I really, really commend Israel Adesanya, and it's why I think he is just he's a resource that has not been tapped yet. Because when I look at Israel Adesanya, he still is not a household name, but among UFC fighters, he has one of the biggest potentials to become a superstar for the UFC. When you listen to him talk, when you watch videos of him, and when you watch him fight, everything he does is an A+. He's got a great personality. The way he carries himself to me is almost Muhammad Ali-like, in that he walks around and it seems like he just is thinking about 470 things at the same time while he's always shadow boxing. It's very interesting. So I really think Israel Adesanya, it represents a great opportunity for the UFC. Like, he could be the next superstar, but I'm very concerned because he signed up to fight Yoel Romero. And the thing is this, Jason, guys who fight Romero are not the same afterwards. Let's look at Wyman, Whitaker, Rockhold, Paulo Costa. After they fought Romero, the combined victories these guys have after they fought Romero last is one. One victory. Wyman won one fight, and that's it. Granted, a lot of these guys have been sidelined and whatnot, so it is cherry picking. But think about that again. Since 2016, of all the guys Romero's been in the cage with, they only have one victory since their last fight with him. And so that to me is the biggest concern for Adesanya. Even if he wins, he might not be the same because he's going at there with an 185 or maybe 187 pound tank.
No, that's a great point you bring up. I mean, I want to get you the Adesanya asking for this fight, but you know, one of the things that when you look at Israel's time in the UFC, the one thing that is kind of crazy is that there's only been one fight where he hasn't won a fight night bonus, and that was against Martin Vettori back in April of 2018. But you know, the one thing that you do look is you don't have that quote unquote wrestler that he's fought. When you look at his UFC fights, Rob Wilkinson, Martin Vettori, Brad Tavares, Derek Brunson, Anderson Silva, Kelvin Gastelum, and Robert Whitaker. I mean, some of those fighters do have wrestling, but obviously nothing near what the credentials that Yoel Romero has. I mean, you have to imagine that Yoel and his team there at American Top Team have probably really looked at that fight against Kelvin Gastelum and said, okay, how can we maximize on what Kelvin was able to do early on in that fight? Of course, the fifth round, Israel just absolutely took that fight over, to claim the interim title. But, you mentioned about the call out of Yoel Romero. And there's just not, I mean, I there's probably, if you went to, Dana White, Mick Maynard, Sean Shelby, you said, how many fighters have called you up and said, I want Yoel Romero? I don't think they make it past three fingers.
Yeah, I know they're definitely not talking about Darren Till. He definitely won't be one of those fingers, which you know. By the way, I'm very side note. Are we going to see Darren Till, Jared Cannonier fight? Like, is it going to be one of those fights they don't announce and all of a sudden he's making the walkout for the weigh-in? I feel like they're still trying to make that fight happen, even though it's off the books.
No, Cannonier's got an injury, so he's going to be out for a couple months.
Injury?
He had surgery. He announced on his Instagram a couple weeks ago. Yeah, that fight's not happening. You know, anytime soon. That's obviously.
Are we going to see Darren Till in the fight? Is he gonna get a mystery fight?
I don't think Darren Till can get a visa. I think that's Darren Till's issue is more of the visa issue because of, yeah. I mean, look, in today's world that we live in, if you get in legal trouble in another country and you're not a United States resident, there's going to be difficulties, you know, obtaining that work visa to be able to enter the United States. I mean, look, and the UFC has dealt with this countless times. Bellator, you know, has done it with countless times where, you know, there's some fighters that, they were ultimately able to get them a visa at some point, but then there was, I know of one fighter that they weren't able to get a visa for, and that was Frodo Kasparov. So, you know, it's something that these organizations are very familiar with dealing with. And, you know, I mean, look, I understand with this fight booking the negative thought of, man, should we really be giving a fighter coming off a two losses, even though, I mean, the Paulo Costa fight was a super close fight, but because of Paulo Costa's injury, this is part of why this fight is happening here. But the other side, I look at this and I say, I'm not upset that they made this fight because I look at it, I say, you know what, this is an awesome fight. And as a consumer of the fight game, I'm just excited to watch these two guys throw it down on Saturday night.
Yeah, me too, man. And I think from a big picture standpoint, and maybe I'm a lot more positive about the UFC whenever we do preview shows of big pay-per-views, even though this won't do a big number at all. Like, this will not do a big number. This is, let's all pitch in to watch this fight, or let's go to Buffalo Wild Wings. This is not appointment viewing television, unfortunately, for the UFC. But anyways, my larger point is this is a fight I really want to see. And when I look across the UFC, I feel like the health of the UFC is improving a whole lot. Like, I feel like they have, like, every champion they have, I think, has great potential to be more marketable. And this is a great platform for Adesanya to paint a canvas. And I think that's what he's trying to do right now, because I think he has a perspective and a goal of being an all-time great legendary fighter. And when I look at how he approaches his career thus far, it seems like he's looking at these opportunities to paint a canvas. He has the opportunity to take out the legend, Anderson Silva. And here he's going up against the big bull of this division. And it's a great fight. And I think because of the fight style of Yoel Romero and the fact that he's been so close to championship opportunities, and the fact that even now I'm concerned for Adesanya potentially even winning this fight because of the power Romero possesses, that's why I'm down for this fight. Because, like, you know, we'll talk about it later, but, like, you rematch Benavidez and Figueiredo, and I just don't feel like Benavidez has a path to victory. You give Jose Aldo a chance against Henry Cejudo, a fight against Henry Cejudo. I don't think Aldo has a good shot at all at beating Cejudo, so I'm not excited. Romero versus Adesanya, to me, I can get behind, because I actually can talk myself into Romero dropping Adesanya. Because at the end of the day, when you have a really skilled athlete who has two sledgehammers in his two hands, then to me, it's like he's a game fighter, and that's in addition to his wrestling. So Adesanya has a tough test to get past Yoel Romero, but overall, I'm just very excited for the health of this middleweight division. Because when you look at the possible road going forward for Adesanya, it's like, damn, there are some exciting contenders. Romero, Paulo Costa is obviously next. And then the guy who you mentioned was injured, Jared Cannonier. I mean, he's really looked like an explosive middleweight too. So overall, I'm excited for this fight. I think, simply put, the style bender is going to utilize his length, his smoothness, his speed to outstrike Yoel Romero in a hard-fought five-round decision.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, it's more of, do I think that Israel can somehow get the stoppage at some point? But look, if you tell me Yoel Romero goes out there and gets the win, that would not surprise me. I'm really looking forward to this one. You know, this is a card that I will not be watching live start to finish, because I'm taking my wife to go see Jeff Dunham here on late Saturday afternoon, and then we're going to do dinner after the show. So I'll probably get home around, you know, sometime probably between 8 and 9. So, be tuning into those ESPN prelims, and look, I'll be sitting on my couch. You know, you mentioned a second ago about how, you know, maybe this may not be the biggest of buy rates. And, you know, I can tell you that, I mean, obviously the January pay-per-view, I had multiple people, you know, ask me about, hey, where are we watching the fight? Where are you watching the fight? Are we going out? Whatnot? You know, February's pay-per-view, I really didn't have that. I haven't had anybody ask me to this point about where I'm watching the fights. But yeah, my plan is, you know, on Saturday night, get home and order it on ESPN Plus and take on the fights. You know, I saw some people kind of complaining about the ESPN stream the other day, and maybe it's because I just boosted my internet speed at my house. Like I've never really had problems with the ESPN Plus stream.
Yeah, to me, the only time I buffer is whenever I'm watching it live, but I have really bad internet. And also, like, my computer is really far away from my modem, which is just incredibly stupid, actually.
Yeah, I boosted up to 500 megs up, 500 megs down, so I shouldn't have any issues, yeah.
You dot your I's and you cross your T's with that kind of stuff, though. Like, you got the best stuff, so I feel like you're not really, I'm much more relatable, because not everyone takes care of their internet like you do. Like, I'm too lazy to get, like, that thing that extends the modem. I'm just like, this is my reality. Like, I've noticed this weird thing, bro. I don't know if this is real or not, but I was watching a movie. I was watching Knives Out, and the movie would not load if I had my HDMI cord in my computer. But when I took it out and it went from the TV back to my laptop, it started loading. I put it back, the HDMI back in, and it affected my Wi-Fi. I don't know if that's a thing, but I believe HDMI cords somehow affect internet connection.
How about you just step up your game on your internet speed? Come on, Daniel. Come on.
Yeah, you're right.
No,
you're
it's
right.
When I was so like I've had I've got Frontier FiOS, which is when I got it was initially Verizon. So I mean, like I've been with them, I don't know, like 5 years. So like right when I started with, I was like 75 megs up, 75 megs down, and then, you know, kind of recently the modem started kind of going bad, and, you know, I call them up and I'm like, hey, you know, what do you have? Like, oh, we can give you 100 megs up, 100 megs down, same price you're paying right now. Or if you want to spend $20 more a month, we can give you 500 up, 500 down. I'm like, let me just go 500 up, 500 down. That's only $20.
Yeah, you and literally.
For someone who streams everything, like, I'm like, yeah, I need to have that speed. Yeah.
Yeah, you do. Nothing's worse than whenever the internet's down. Like, it just, I feel like a drug addict who is just like, I need my fix. I need my internet. What do you mean I got to go outside? I got to refresh Twitter. Yeah, there's nothing worse than that. But I feel like you probably have like a backup modem or something. You're always prepared for the worst.
I don't have that. I don't have the backup modem. No. Thankfully, yeah. You know, knock on wood, I've never had that issue. But
yeah, you've never had your internet go out?
Not for like a length of time. I mean, like, yeah, you know, maybe it goes out for like 30 seconds or something, but not like,
dude,
it's out 20 for like minutes or something.
Oh my gosh, yeah, I've had it out for hours, dude. I mean, it's because I live in South Texas, they just stopped caring, but like, and an hour is a length of time. What do I do now? Like,
so it was a couple weeks ago in my main office, our internet went out. And so it was like, because it was a business account, they got out there like right quick, but there was a part of like, for like 2 hours, I'm sitting there going, what do I do? I have no internet. How do I kind of, you know, so you try to do stuff on your phone, but yeah, it's, I've never had problems, you know, with the ESPN, but I know I saw some people kind of complaining about it with UFC, Norfolk. Of course, we'll get into that later on. You know, the co-main event, you know, Wei Li Zhang, you know, making her first title defense, of course. You know, in a way, kind of, you know, shocked the MMA community, especially in the method that she won the title against Jessica Andrade late last year in China. And of course, it's been an interesting camp for her because of the coronavirus. You know, the UFC basically, and if you watch the countdown show, she goes into details on this, where basically the UFC calls her and says, "Look, we got to get you out of China." So she ends up going to Thailand, then she goes to Abu Dhabi. And then, you know, she made her way to Las Vegas. I thought what was also very interesting about the profile of her on the countdown show was her talking about why she has made the steps to learn English, and basically saying that, you know, the first time that she came to Vegas for a fight, she couldn't communicate with anyone. And she realized that she needed to learn a language. And, you know, who knows, maybe she can become, I mean, obviously she's a huge star in China currently, but maybe she can become a huge draw here in the United States. And of course, Ioana, of course, the reign that she had, she noted in the Countdown show about, you know, the amount of days she held the UFC title, which I want to say she's like 940 plus days. And she noted that it had been over 800 days since she held that title. And, you know, really kind of the narrative with her heading into this fight is, from what she has been saying, is my mind is right. My mind is in the right place. I don't have, you know, the bad mojo, bad karma in her life, and noting about, you know, and she's kind of talked about in the past of her personal life and kind of how she has some bad things going on there. But this is one of those fights where I just, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if Ioana wins, but I guess I'm kind of feeling this. I feel like her time has passed at 115, and the division not just has caught up with, you know, the top end of that division has not just caught up with her, but they've passed her a little bit.
I think that's certainly where I'm laying into. I think for me, the difference between Zhang and Ioana, and maybe some of those other fighters atop of the women's strawweight division, is the power that Wally Zhang has. That concerns me the most against Ioana Jędrzejczyk. Like, I feel like just looking at Wally Zhang, she is so put together muscular-wise. Like, she looks like she can rip your face off. Like, she is buff. It makes sense why she puts people away, because you look at her body and you're like, she's able to generate a whole lot of power. And when you take into account that she's weighing in at 115 pounds, it's like, how has she knocked out everybody? Like, how did Tisha Torres go the distance with her? How did Danielle Taylor go the distance with her? Well, I mean, Taylor just, you know, ran away. But I think Zhang Guali best days are ahead of her, and I think her approach to the game is very, very disciplined. She's not worried about her mental, you know, she's not like, I got my mind right. She's like, my mind never was a part of the equation. It's all about being disciplined and working hard, and that's my martial arts philosophy. She has a real seriousness approach to the preparation that I respect. But when it comes to the preparation, you mentioned the coronavirus, and that drastically affected her preparation. Getting on one airplane to train somewhere from Abu Dhabi, Thailand, back to America, that is a stark contrast to what I imagine Ioana Jędrzejczyk probably had in American Top Team, where it's just business as usual. And that's another aspect of it. This is business as usual for Ioana Jędrzejczyk, who has been a part of several high-level women's fights, whereas a lot of times we'll see fighters peak, win the championship, and then once they get that high, they're not performing that way in their follow-up fights. Maybe the pressure of championship opportunities gets the best of them, or their process of how they prepare is stifled. And so those are two aspects where I think Ioana has an advantage, Jason, is she had probably a much more formal and fight camp that played out how she imagined it to, and she's been there before, whereas this is a time where Zhang Guali really has a spotlight on her. The last time we saw her, she was a big underdog, and now she's the champion, and now she's someone where we start to expect her to knock people out time and time again. So again, I think when I look at this fight, what I imagine happening, Zhang Guali finishes Ioana Jędrzejczyk in the second round. I just feel like the power is a bit too much, but I do think Ioana's going to want to play this out on the feet and counter-strike and outpointer, and that's certainly a possibility. This is a very close fight, but I think Zhang Guali is the pick. And then the last thing I'll mention regarding this fight is to talk about the coronavirus. I feel like if you're the UFC, obviously the coronavirus is absolutely awful, and it's like taking it's just the dominant storyline in life today. And I think Zhang Guali represents a really interesting way to tell that story if you're the UFC, if she's victorious, that the coronavirus obviously impacted her. She talked, I loved the UFC embedded where, there's the first one where she talked about, and it may be that may have leaked into the Countdown show, 'cause I think they use like similar stuff. But Well, maybe they don't, but maybe she said the same story. Anyways, she was complaining to her mom about the perils of her traveling and like lack of sleep or something. And her mom was just like, you have no reason to complain. The real fighters are the ones that are the, you know, the first responders, fighting, you know, treating people and whatnot in China. So like you could tell, like she's raised in a real, like no nonsense, have a perspective, household. So anyways, more of the story is Zhang Guali, I think really, represents someone who was displaced for this fight camp and who, and was affected by the coronavirus. And now the disease is spreading. So I do think that's a major storyline for this fight in particular.
Yeah, I mean, the coronavirus has an effect just on the sporting world. You know, I had somebody the other day say to me, you go, if you had bought tickets, bought airfare, hotel to go to Vegas for this fight, would the coronavirus affect your thought process? And would you go? And I said, you know what? I never thought of it, but I bet there's people who have canceled their trip to Vegas because of Vegas just being such a tour city of people coming to Vegas from all over the world that maybe it would have an effect on whether I would go to the fights or not.
Yeah, I think for me it wouldn't, just because the more I read about the coronavirus, the more I'm like, oh, this isn't going away. We just kind of have to live with this. Like when I read about it, I read an article for The Atlantic where it's just like, this might just be like a new, like this is just another flu. This is just a thing that exists. And I don't choose to be scared about it. It doesn't seem like all this, like don't go to sporting events things has worked to prevent the spread of the disease. Just think whatever.
I don't know if you saw, but they're going to do crowd-less events at the Arnold Classic this weekend in Columbus. I know the Ohio Combat League has got a fight card because Anthony Romero is fighting for a title on that card. As far as I know, they're still going ahead with that event. But yeah, I mean, it's, you know, for me, and I don't know if this happened for you, we actually, I think, had two cases here locally in the Tampa Bay area. So it started to kind of hit real. I mean, it's one of those stories where I feel like we don't know all the facts about it. And I think that's what's the thing that kind of scares you the most and why I think people may stay away, you know, from those. And it does make you wonder. I mean, obviously the UFC has an event in Columbus, Ohio, where the Arnold is at in 3 weeks. It makes you wonder if that's going to have an effect on future UFC events.
Yeah. And I do think, looking at how the tea leaves go, I think it's going to snowball and we're going to see more cancellations. I mean, so the college I went to and the college I work for occasionally for sporting events is in the Western Athletic Conference. And the worst team in that league is Chicago State. Like, they lose basically all their games every year. Anyways, I saw on ESPN that they announced that they were not traveling for the last two games of the regular college basketball season. They just, I guess, forfeited. I'm not sure about that, but they decided not to go on the road for the last two games, and they probably won't go to the WAC tournament. Although I don't even know if they made it. But so yeah, that I saw that, which was kind of crazy. And I just think it's going to snowball. It's going to get worse. I know in Japan, I mean, they have canceled basically all the wrestling shows for the month, which is like, you know, for these professional wrestling companies that are kind of smaller, canceling these shows is actually like potentially threatening their promotion themselves because they kind of use those houses to keep afloat. So honestly, when I look at what's going to happen with the coronavirus, my general prediction is that it's going to get worse and then we're just going to kind of ignore it. Like I think it's going to peak in a few weeks with things canceling and whatnot. And then it's just going to kind of be like another thing like the swine flu and whatnot.
Yeah, only time is going to tell that, but I do expect Wally to go out there and successfully defend the women's strawweight title. Now, before we get to the rest of UFC 248, I do want to tell you about our presenting sponsor this week, and that is Roman. Talking about erectile dysfunction isn't easy. Usually, we just brush it off or blame ourselves by saying things like, I lost my mojo, or avoid it altogether with excuses like, I had a long day at work, or sorry, honey, I'm just not feeling it. But with Roman, it's easy to talk about it with a real doctor who can prescribe real medications. It's simple, safe, and totally discreet.
With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. The doctor will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, Roman will ship it to you with free 2-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward, simple, and discreet. Getting started is simple. Just go to GetRoman.com/MMAReport and complete an online visit. Erectile dysfunction used to be tough to tackle, but now there's Roman. Complete an online visit today to connect with a doctor and take care of it.
And as Daniel just said, all you got to do is go to GetRoman.com/MMAReport to get a free online visit and free 2-day shipping. That's GetRoman.com/MMAReport for a free visit to get started. GetRoman.com/MMAReport. And when you use that direct URL there, and let's Roman know that you heard about them here on the MMA Report podcast. Of course, another way to show your support for this podcast is by leaving a rating and review, particularly on Apple Podcasts or whatever podcast platform that you listen to the show on. We really do appreciate that. So we've talked about the main event and co-main event, and you know, we've talked about some other interesting facts, you know, fighters on this card. You know, to me, like, if I was going to label like my top three things in this card, Daniel, to me, I would go, my number one would be Sean O'Malley against Jose Alberto Quinones, and more about you know, the return of Sean O'Malley, the fact that we haven't seen him in 2 years because of obviously that USADA situation. You know, number two, I would put Alex Oliveira versus Max Griffin, just because I think that's just going to be a fun fight to sit back and watch, because I just don't think Alex Oliveira can find himself in a boring fight. And number three, I would put as Mark Mattson, the undefeated prospect at 155 pounds. We saw him in his last fight just look absolutely dominating in the UFC, taking on Austin Hubbard. So for me, for after the main event, co-main event, those are my 1, 2, 3 of what interests me the most.
Yeah. You know, a fight that we're not going to talk about in our 1, 2, 3, but it's just worth mentioning that this is a compelling contest, is Jakar Close versus Benil Dariush. I don't know why neither guy really sticks out to me, but like, this is a lightweight contest between two guys who are winning 3 straight. But for some reason, I'm not very excited. So they did not make my top three, Jason. But my top three. Number one, we are on the same boat, man. Sean O'Malley, he's exciting as hell. A great personality, a talented fighter. He's taking on a fighter in Jose Quinones who is solid, but the level of competition he's faced thus far isn't particularly impressive. And I think O'Malley is going to have a great night here. Number two, I respect the Oliveira-Max Griffin fight for sure. But to me, Neil Magny, Li Jingling, really excites me a whole heck of a lot. I mean, we have not seen Magny fight since he lost to Ponzinibbio in that main event, which is like in 2018, which is something you don't say often, because this dude was a workhorse. I mean, Magny fought so often. He's had a lot of time off, a lot of time away, and I'm very interested to see where he's at. And he's taking on a guy in Lee who has literally won 7 of his last 8. He has dynamic power. Back-to-back performance of the night honors with his knockouts over Zaleski Dos Santos and David Zawada. And Jingling and Neil Magny, to me, is the top fight that I'm looking forward to, even though Sean O'Malley himself is number one. And then number three, I will give you, I respect the Mark Mattson pick, and I probably would fit it there. But just to be a little different, I'm looking forward to seeing Rodolfo Vieira take on Saprobak Safarov, just because I feel as though Rodolfo Vieira is very similar to Mark Mattson, in that he comes in where he's really, 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 really experienced and skilled in one background. For Vieira, it's jiu-jitsu, and he's getting his MMA career started. And he's 6-0, won his first fight in the UFC. I'm looking forward to seeing Rodolfo Vieira take on Saprobak Safarov in the middleweight division.
And Vieira, massive betting favorite in that fight. He's a 7.5-1 favorite. I know, you know, he's up as much as an 8.5-1 favorite. Just a huge favorite of that. Just kind of touch back on a little bit about Benil Dariush, of what you said there. Very quietly, you know, has won 3 in a row since that knockout loss against Alexander Hernandez. Of course, remember that was Alexander's UFC debut, where he stepped up on short notice. And by the way, Alexander now going to take on Islam Makhachev here next month. But, you know, in that 3-fight winning streak, a decision win against Thiago Moses, submission win against Drew Dober, the submission win against Frank Camacho. I mean, obviously, if you're Dracar Close, you can't go to the ground with this guy. You can't let your ego maybe get the best of you, where you maybe say, hey, I want to beat him at what he does best. To me, I think if Dracar Close is going to win this fight and pull off the upset, it's about keeping the fight on the feet and not allowing Beneil Dariush basically get a hold of him. I think he's got to keep this fight at range. But that is definitely, I mean, I think, like, you talk about an under-the-radar fight, Dariush Close may be very much up there under radar. I think Mershart win is a little bit of an under-the-radar fight as well.
Oh, yeah, I was literally about to say that. I was literally about to say the other one is win Mershart. I mean, dude, like, to be trained by Daniel Cormier, do you have to be short for your weight class or what? Like, this dude, Darren Wynn, man, he's like a Daniel Cormier protege, right? And his dude's like 5'7".
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Cormier manages him.
He manages him, right? Like, he's all behind him. I can't believe this dude's 5'7", fighting at 185. Like, think about that for a second. Like, all right, he's 5'7", fighting at 185. Sean O'Malley's 5'11", fighting at 135. Dude, this fight's interesting because, like, you look at Wynn and he has a lot of exciting tools, but what really worries you is Mershart is very scrappy, a veteran presence, and most importantly, the physical frame is just so much bigger than Darren Wynn that's why I'm thinking he's going to beat Darren Wynn. But that's why it's compelling, is that I can talk myself into both guys winning. If I'm going to give you a sleeper fight... Gosh, I think we really nailed a lot of stuff here. But on the ESPN Plus prelims, Giga Chikadze is a very exciting striker. I think him versus Jamal Emmers is an interesting fight. I mean, my pick is Jamal Emmers because I think he's just going to out-wrestle him. But if Giga Chikadze defends the wrestling or gets back up, I mean, this could be a really dynamic performance for Giga. I mean, he's the superior striker in a big way, even though I think he's going to get out-wrestled.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. If you're Jamal in that fight, is that this is not a kickboxing fight. This is an MMA fight, and you got to make it a well-rounded fight. I mean, of course, you know, that's a fight that's a short notice replacement, as Jamal's opponent was involved in a motorcycle accident, pulled out of the fight, I want to say 2 weeks ago, I want to say. You know, so that to me, that's definitely, when those early prelims, something to pay attention to. I mean, like, if I was going to label one betting underdog, that if you told me I had to pick them to win and I could only pick one betting underdog, Gerald Mershart would be my answer.
Ooh, yeah, because I'm like literally picking him. So I agree with you. As I look up and down the betting odds, okay, first off, I want to say this. Cyberback Safarov at plus 525 is way too much odds here for taking on a guy in Vieira who's only 6-0 and is generally, like, you know, he's really good at jiu-jitsu, but, like, you have guys like that should not be minus 750. So that one's very interesting to me. Like, I could see upset potential there. Other than that, I like Neil Magny at plus 155 against Li Jing Lang. I really like those odds, and I really like Dracar Close at plus 150 against Beneil Dariush.
I mean, you look at the challengers and the title fights. I think they're both live dogs in that situation, but really looking forward to watching UFC 248 coming up on Saturday night. Of course, we had a UFC fight card last weekend in Virginia. And of course, obviously the storyline is about the main event, the fact that Davison Figueiredo misses weight, and then of course goes out there and wins by knockout. And, you know, Daniel, not exactly apologetic about missing weight, and which I think obviously raises a lot of questions on, you know, how much effort was put into making weight. And of course, you know, the future of the flyweight division. Yesterday, Dana White talking to the media in Las Vegas, you know, noted that they were having a matchmaker meeting today, meaning Wednesday, and that he does like the thought process of running this one back, you know, for the vacant title. You know, feels that, you know, because of the headbutt and a little bit of controversy, that he thinks it does fit here. You know, it's one of those fights where, you know, Joseph Benavidez is one of the most beloved fighters in the MMA industry. I don't think you're really going to hear anybody, you know, say anything bad about Joseph Benavidez. And I don't know how much that maybe plays into of the UFC going this route. But, you know, I've been thinking about this whole flyweight division and whether the UFC should keep it or whether they should move away from it. I think it sticks around most likely. I've talked to people that think it's going away. I think most likely it sticks around. I think A, because it's not a division that's likely costing the UFC a lot of money in terms of fighter salaries. But if you told me the flyweight division goes away tomorrow, am I upset about it? No, not really.
Yeah, it really feels like the flyweight division is like the cousin in the family that keeps on screwing up, right? It's like, come on, you could have just made weight and crowned a champion. We literally gave you a championship fight and we still don't have a flyweight champion. It's like Greg, you know, he like crashed the car again. I'm a defender of the flyweight division, but I think as a defender, I speak for other defenders of the flyweight division. We're just tired, man. We're just tired. You just keep on screwing up. And the thing is, okay, so with this fight, in, I mean, Davison Figueiredo really screwed himself out of a lot of money here. Like, he lost money by missing weight. And those paychecks are a lot smaller if you're not a champion. Like, if you're a champion, that's life-changing money right there. I mean, not life-changing money, but it is a lot of money. And just by missing weight, he really, like, dramatically affected the amount of money in his bank account. And, you know, he's got a great opportunity if they do rebook that fight. Like, I'm not super excited about it because watching the main event, it just felt like Figueiredo was the better fighter. Round one was pretty close. It was a back-and-forth striking exchange. I will admit that. But, man, the way Figueiredo put away Joseph Benavidez in round two, that was so definitive. I guess you can certainly make the case that the headbutt played a role in it. And I'm okay with the rematch only because there isn't a clear cut challenger. Literally, like, to me, the guy you give the title fight to would be Alexander Pantoja. But these are guys who are just coming off one win in a row. So I'm like, whatever, let's run it back. Because the reason why I kind of want to run it back is because Benavidez is such a well-liked guy. I feel like this is his last shot at being a champion. So that's why I'm kind of okay with it, Jason, because I feel like the division has kind of passed him by. So I'm okay with just one last stand for Joseph Benavidez, because it just feels downright criminal that this poor man will never be able to call himself UFC champion, or maybe he will be able to change that. But it seems unlikely based on the main event we saw last week.
Yeah, it was one of those fights where heading into it, I think that majority, if not all of the MMA community was rooting for Joe, as for him to, you know, get that, you know, finally get that title fight, of course, because, I mean, look, the narrative around Joe Benavidez right now is him being, you know, one of the best to never win a UFC title that's been in the frame. But when I looked at when you go back and you watch the fight, and I watched this fight live and I went back and watched it again. You know, one of the things that really sticks out to me is even before the headbutt, Joe kept wiping his forehead like his hair was messing with him a little bit. You know, while I think he did win the first round, but as you watch the fight, you see the speed difference between and the power difference between both of them. And just like you said, you run this back another time, I don't think the fight goes much different. I see Davison Figueiredo as a better fighter. I think the question mark is whether he makes weight or not. And you know, it's one of these things for Davison Figueiredo and his manager. I just wish they would just have been more apologetic, because ultimately is him missing weight could have been the final nail in the flyweight division, you know, coffin if the UFC wanted to go that route. The one thing I always say about, and I know there is a community of defenders of the flyweight division. There's clearly a fan base out there for it. The one thing that always sticks out to me about the flyweight division is, If there was truly an audience there and promotions that felt they could make money on the flyweight division, why has Bellator never got into it?
I think it's really simple, man. The only thing that's going to get Bellator in the flyweight division is going to be a star. And that to me is what's going on with like adding weight classes nowadays. It's like, can you build a weight class around it? Because the flyweights, for some reason, don't connect at the same level that all the other weight classes do, because they're so light, I guess. So it's like, if you're Bellator, there isn't any reason to invest in flyweight division unless you see someone who you think you can build it around, similar to how they built a women's division around Alima Leigh McFarlane. But the flyweights on their own, flyweight B versus flyweight A, isn't as interesting as heavier guys fighting. I mean, it's just, I don't know what it is. It's just human nature. It's still pretty damn interesting to me, but it's just not as interesting to your casual fan. I mean, it's why the heavyweight division in the UFC to me is just the biggest thing where it's like there's so much more potential to do good business, and I don't know why. People love seeing heavyweights fight. I mean, they are salivating at the thought of Fury taking on Anthony Joshua. It just feels like, or it just feels right. Like, it feels like this is just what humans are meant to do. Watch big dudes throw bungalows at each other. So I think that's just the general bias, and it makes the flyweights less valuable. But for a promotion that runs so many events, I think the flyweights do add value to the UFC, and they're worth keeping around and investing in. They present nice platforms for guys like Henry Cejudo to build a name for themselves and move up a weight class. And that starts to make intriguing fights. So I would stick with it. Yeah, Justin Benavidez, he may get another opportunity. I mean, that list of guys who are the best fighters to not be champion, Benavidez might be number one. Like the other guys I would look at would be both Diaz brothers, Uriah Faber, if you don't include the WEC championships. And then I would go with, I don't know who else I would go. Oh, Donald Cerrone would be another one. But, I mean, Benavidez might be number one.
Other names I've seen thrown out there, Kenny Florian and Chael Sonnen.
Oh, yeah. Those are good. Those are good. Yeah, Ken Florian's really good, actually. Because this dude changed so many weight classes just to try and win a damn title. And he just was unsuccessful. But, yeah, Kenny Florian was actually, to me, maybe there's another guy, but he was definitely one of the OG guys in that Joseph Benavidez spot. That he's like, he's clearly the number two guy. John Fitch was in that spot, actually. The longest time, John Fitch was like the uncrowned welterweight champion if GSP didn't exist.
Yeah, problem is just that fighting style. No one enjoyed that fighting style. But, you know, the other two big storylines with this fight night card last weekend was the women's featherweight title picture, and then of course B, the Ankalaev and Kutalaba fight. You know, first up on the featherweight title picture, to me, like, I don't even think this is a debate, Daniel. It's Felicia Spencer.
She literally beat Megan Anderson. They both had first round finishes. One was the co-main event, one wasn't. It's Felicia Spencer. It's fine. It's fine. All right. They can wait. There's only like seven women featherweights.
Hey, huh? She beat Megan 9 months ago in under 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Okay, if you are going to do the fight in Australia, okay, I understand why you do Amanda Nunes versus Megan Anderson. But the fact is, it sounds like they want to do this in Brazil. To me, it's got to be Felicia Spencer. And also, I think Felicia Spencer has a much better chance of potentially dethroning Amanda Nunes than Megan Anderson does.
She has a better chance, but it's not much of one, in my opinion. I mean, this was an easy fight for her.
Look, let's be honest about it. These were both showcase fights.
Yeah, they were. I mean, for Felicia, it was simple. I'm going to take you down, I'm going to punch you in the face, I'm going to elbow you, and I'm going to finish you. That was her strategy. It was very simple. It reminded me of just there's a big talent disparity between the top fighters. There's a big disparity between the champion and then the top two contenders and everyone else. So Felicia deserves a shot next, but both of them pass with flying colors. Both Felicia Spencer and Megan Anderson did a phenomenal job of boosting their stock in a division that desperately needed them to do that, because it is obviously so razor thin, we know it, but Anderson and Spencer definitely helped the division progress with their performances.
Yeah, I mean, it was great performances by both of them, but to me, it should be Felicia Spencer. Next, and of course, the other big storyline was the Magomed Ankalaev and Ion Kutalaba fight. Only lasts 38 seconds. Look, you can't defend Kevin McDonald. I think Kevin McDonald's one of the better referees in our sport, but he had an awful night, plain and simple. You can't defend his actions. He He stopped that fight way too early. But here's, like, before the fight even starts. Okay, so he, you know, Kutalaba tries to do his thing at the weigh-ins where, like, he, you know, tries to bum rush his opponent. Like, dude, you're fighting a guy from Dagestan. Like, you're not going to affect this dude. This dude has probably seen worse things than you've ever seen in your life. But then be like, to run at him as Bruce Buffer is calling your name, like, that could go very bad because all of a sudden, let's just say, like, punches start getting thrown before the fight starts. The commission may just yank the fight right at that moment. So I hope there's someone around Ian Kutalaba who has a hard tire conversation with him of like, dude, if you want to do this, like, you know, scary walk, go to the middle of the cage. The other thing is the commission inspectors for Virginia there, they looked like fans. I mean, you have to stop that.
Mm-hmm. It was ridiculous. I'm okay with Kevin McDonald. Like, it's okay. He has a track record of being a good official. It happens. And this was a bad stoppage, plain and simple, obviously. I mean, this was just a poor execution. But it's time for me to defend Kevin McDonald's stoppage. I'm ready to do this because I've rewatched this thing a couple times.
I'm ready for this one because I've talked to a lot of people on this one. I have not talked to anyone who's defended him.
Okay. When you stop the frame of when Kevin McDonald decided to stop this fight, Ian Kutalaba is rocked and his eyes are looking away from the man that's striking. He looks out on his feet.
I've seen someone else kind of note this.
You know who else noted this? Dan Hardy. Dan Hardy on the broadcast literally said he's out on his feet as Kevin made the decision to do it. So, honest to God, and I know Ian Kutalaba said he was playing possum. That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my damn life. I'm playing possum.
Here's the thing about that, Daniel. If that is part of your game plan, how about you give the referee a little heads up in the back when he comes and goes over the rules with you?
But can you imagine telling Big John you're going to play possum? Imagine telling Big John that he's going to be like, really? You fucking idiot. I'm sorry.
Dude, that would be a great embedded episode. That's all I'm saying. Come on, UFC. Dude, step your game up.
Dude, but imagine telling a referee you're going to play possum anyway. That's so stupid. Just don't do it. The referee's job is like supposed to like, oh, he's out of it. I got to stop it. So, yeah, the thing is, my general point defending Kevin McDonald is, a lot of times guys are out on their feet. They're not there and they're just receiving punishment. And so I like to stop the video right when the referee makes a decision. And that's the one thing I'll mention is I look at Kutalaba. He is not looking at his opponent. He looks out of it and he looks like he's just standing on his feet. Obviously, it was a bad stoppage because the result is, but yeah, I just think Kutalaba, if he was playing possum, he screwed himself.
This is my question. Can we ever get to a point where we could use instant replay and the fight continues?
Honestly, I think it should.
But how do you? Because like say in that situation where, you know, some of those shots weren't landing, but some were. But now you've potentially given a guy 5-10 minutes to recover.
Mm-hmm.
Is it fair to the fighter who is being offensive?
No, it's not fair at all, actually. It's a disadvantage because it's clear, like, without those 5 minutes to rest, theoretically that offensive fighter maybe could have finished it in the next 30 seconds. But it allows the guy to recover and potentially change the tide of the fight. Overall, I would say personally, I would be okay with that because I just feel like with the benefit of instant replay, it's like we get a more conclusive fight finish. I don't know. It's a tough one. At the very least, I think this should be overturned to be a no contest, though. I agree. Yeah, I just think this fight in particular is a no-brainer, common sense. This was a bad stoppage, even though I still will stand up for Kevin McDonald a little bit here.
I say run it back.
Yeah, yeah. But Kutalaba is a crazy man. Like, This dude from Moldova, the Hulk, he does some crazy stuff. So you never know what to expect, but you're right, dude. Running up on someone like that is like we are fortunate nothing bad happened there. That, I mean, you're in a cage with a guy who's about to fight you. You don't think he's ready to fight already? Like, damn.
Look, if we ever want chaos in the sport, could you imagine if we got to the point where a corner could throw in a red challenge flag? Joe Rogan would lose his mind on the broadcast.
Yeah, he would.
Like right as your guy's about to get hammered down and lose, you just throw a challenge flag in there. Illegal shot.
I know. Can you? Yeah.
That's all. That's the whole. The states that do have instant replay, it's basically once you go to replay, the fight's over.
And I think that makes the most sense for right now, because the case of time in mixed martial arts is just so much more valuable than in any other sport, because it's all about recovery. Whereas, you know, you can take all the time you want in the world, the basketball game is going to be pretty similar. You know, the experiences for both teams are exact. But in MMA, you know, the time for replay allows the person who you've done offense on to recover.
Yeah, it'll be interesting maybe see if history play comes up this year at the ABC annual meeting. Do want to note up on the MMAreport.com right now, I do have interviews with Grant Dawson and Kyle Phillips, who both got victories a part of this card. Kyle Phillips, a very impressive performance he had against Gabriel Silva. Also, I would note Sean Brady's performance, I think, is something to mention. And also, Jordan Griffin getting dominated by TJ Brown just turns that thing around to get the submission win. You feel bad for TJ because he was dominating that fight. But to me, those are kind of – and Brandon Allen, I think, got mentioned also getting a first-round victory.
Yeah, dude. The other one I would go with is two. One would be – this fight was boring, but he owned up to it. Violent Bob Ross, Luis Pena. Just went for like 400 rear naked chokes against Steve Garcia to get the victory. And then the finish that was impressive that you didn't mention would be from the Alpha Ginger. Phenomenal name, Spike Carlisle. Keep an eye on this guy. This guy really, I think, gets it when it comes to being an outside-the-box character. And it seems like he has talent to back it up, landing some borderline illegal elbows to finish Alon Cruz early in the first round.
Obviously, I know Alon Cruz because he's from my hometown here in Tampa, Florida. I know his manager, Danny Rubenstein, is going to be appealing that decision. I don't think it gets overturned, overall, just because it's a, is there a case to be made for potentially illegal shots? Yes, but I don't think there's a clear definite that those were, the elbow, I think the one that kind of set it all up, but I doubt that thing gets overturned. But yeah, Spike Carlisle did look very good in getting that victory. But yeah, looking forward to the fights this weekend. Of course, be sure to check out our presenting sponsor, Roman. Go to getroman.com/MMAreport to get a free online visit and free 2-day shipping. Of course, we'll be back next week as we'll get you ready for the Bellator event, the continuation of the Featherweight World Grand Prix. I'm actually going to be doing a Bellator preview show with Pete Rogers Jr. as he lives up there literally in the shadows of the Mohegan Sun. So we'll be talking to him to get a feel for, particularly a lot of those local fighters that will be a part of that preliminary card. Also, talked to Emmanuel Sanchez earlier this week and talking to the other three fighters in those featherweight tournaments here. Bouts later on today, so look for that part of the preview show. Also, a little programming note, my DFS show with Pete Rogers Jr. now will be on awesomo.com. We will be live on Thursday night at 7:30 p.m. Eastern time on their YouTube channel, so look out for that. If you got any DFS questions for me to ask Pete, we'll be there as well. Anything else you want to get out of here before we get out of here, Daniel?
Oh man, anything else I want to get out there into the world? Not much, man. Just I will say I finally watched the movie White Men Can't Jump, and pretty good stuff. Pretty good stuff. About 20 some years too late, but I thoroughly enjoyed that movie. So that's the only thing I want to get out there to the world, Jason.
Wow, that's amazing. You finally watched that movie. I'm guessing it has to do a little bit of after seeing the dunk contest.
Yeah, I saw the dunk contest and I was like, well, the other thing is I feel like there are so many movies that I have not seen. So I'm just going back and I'm rewatching classics. I watched Any Given Sunday for the first time ever. I had not seen that movie. And I'm like, damn, this is some good stuff. So I'm just going back rewatching old movies, man.
That's you know, I don't have time to watch movies.
I have a lot of time.
I sit there and go, oh, I got this today. Yeah, but yeah, looking forward to watching the fights on Saturday. Of course, be sure to give Daniel a follow on Twitter at Daniel Galvan, DGG. Be sure to give me a follow on Facebook and Instagram at Jason_Floyd. Follow the MMA Report at MMA Report on all the social media channels where we put preview clips and whatnot out there. So let's go wrap it up for this edition of the MMA Report podcast, which comes out every Wednesday on RadioInfluence.com.
This is a Sitting Ringside with David Penzer quick fix on Radio Influence.
I am here with my old friend Rick Steiner, the dog-faced gremlin. When you look back at the end of WCW, what are your memories now, 25 years later?
Yeah, God dang, it doesn't seem that. You know, for me, I don't remember. You know, I do remember, and people bring up stuff, and there was a lot of good times. But, I mean, it was, I remember going down the road with Sting and Lex and my brother and I, hotel to hotel. And then when Kurt and those guys came in when the NWO thing started, and then it was the ribs were on, and then it was every night just trying to come up with something, who were we going to do to what, and what was going to happen. But it was a good time, and I don't think anybody really knew what the end was going to be. I mean, everybody was being told, Mandalay Bay was going to buy it. And
yeah. I remember, and somebody actually sent me a screenshot recently, I remember getting a call on my home phone, because we weren't really cell phones back then, and somebody said, turn on the WCW website, and it had WCW logo, or WWF logo, purchases in the middle, and down at the bottom, that's how I found out about it. That was like the Tuesday or Wednesday before the last night show.
So what did we do? We did a pay-per-view in Jacksonville, and then we came over to
Panama City. Yeah.
And I think we all knew for sure at Jacksonville at the pay-per-view.
Oh, I didn't know for sure then, but I knew for sure at that in Panama City that was the end.
Oh, yeah.
It was a quick finish. And, it's so many people look back now and said if they know that they were going to sell that entire library for $1.5 million, they could have either bought it themselves or found some money, investors or something.
That's
crazy when you look back at it.
I mean, he got everything. Yeah. The NW, Mid-South, everything.
Sitting Ringside with David Penzer can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, and RadioInfluence.com.